downtrodden and wannabe richies. There's a will, you know. Later he's going to come and laugh at you. They look like just rich. Well, what structure? David? Can we be a little more specific?
Absolute.
The workings of absolute, and how does that strike you? Please explain. How do you say please explain in Spanish?
Explica, por favor.
Explica.
Explica, por favor.
Explica, por favor.
Puede explicar.
Ah.
Puede explicar. Por
puede.
Favor.
Puede.
Puede
explicar.
Explicar, por favor.
Por favor.
Okay, so on the absolute level where
can you put the volume louder? Like, you know, when you go to when you don't have any work and you get money and you know the sound that you make when you get that. Go ahead.
Okay. Where the intent becomes paramount and
you mean you just found that out today? How paramount.
And
Come on, spit it out. Don't try to be all poetic. Just say it.
Yeah, and the action becomes secondary in a sense.
You just realized that today.
No, it's just a reaffirmation.
An affirmation.
Yeah.
You know? When you die, please be sent to a Tibetan cemetery. I'll be waiting. Anyone who needs that karma? That's it? 2.5 hours, that's what I get out of it. That's it. What's the absolute? No, absence of self-cherishing mind.
Absence
of self-cherishing mind is absolute. That's it? That's all you know? You're going to write, aren't you? Joseph, what struck you, if anything?
The proposal is a result of taking vows is to then.
The purpose or the result or both? Be clear. This will help you to translate here. Be clear. Okay, the purpose and the result of taking vows.
Just eventually reach a stage where you don't, you're not actually taking, you don't follow this strict code of taking vows, because you reach a stage where you don't.
Okay, by taking and holding vows, how do you reach a stage of no vows?
Eventually, your mind practices to a stage where you are completely aware of what you believe. At that stage, you're not having this.
So it comes from habituation already. Okay, that's one. Second? Anybody else? Second?
Therefore, instantaneous, therefore, one doesn't have to.
You already said that. Second? Merit. You gain merit. Third is your self-grasping mind becomes less. When your self-grasping mind becomes less, that's called spontaneity. When it's absent, it's totally spontaneous. Mr. Kong, what struck you? You gotta put up your volume because the dog's scratching himself. Very good.
No lines on the digits.
essentially at the learning level, it's all through communal observation of love. And then you further develop to a certain stage of absolute level. That's where you come back.
Wise reliance on the Guru on a relative level or in the beginning, tantamount to reaching absolute in the case of Tantra.
It's because we do not have merit and we cannot fully understand that the Sunni is just a reference.
Is it God?
Yeah,
God. Very simple. We do not have the merit directly to receive teachings from a direct Buddha. For some, the teachers is a living person. For some, it's a bodhisattva. For some, it's an arhat. For some, it's a living Buddha. So the perception of the being is different. The object is different. So, very simple, you cannot receive teaching directly from the Buddha. Okay, what else struck you?
It gives a very clear path. A very direct, simple way to do it on my own. Even though you look at it, because of mindfulness, perseverance, determination, and absolute surrendering of self-cherishing.
That's right. Guru devotion is surrendering of the self-cherishing mind. When you surrender to your Guru, you surrender self-cherishing mind. So therefore, when you surrender to self-cherishing mind, whatever your Guru asks you to do, no matter how incredibly cannot do, you will do it. And the Guru will use that back to you in a positive way. So he will make you do things that you normally would dare not do or never do. Or it's against, or you think it's bad, to make you surrender. And the more you fight, the more you're telling directly you don't need your Guru. When your Guru gives you instruction to do that, and you fight, you tell the Dharma student, I can't do that, I can do better, I should do that, that's not me, blah, blah, blah. You fight. You're indirectly giving a message to your Guru's phone. So why even do it? Anything strike you, Paul? Don't try to look for big words and big subjects. Does anything strike you?
It's all the Guru devotion.
You're cheating. You're following calm.
It's like when you say you're
when you say you what?
In the beginning, you're very religious. If we don't hold our vows as the... If we don't hold our vows to the Guru, then even though we do talk back, so, I think back to
the right intention is the absolute. Achieving the right intention.
Right intention is not the absolute. Right intention leads to the absolute. If you're operating from the absolute, there is no right intention. It's spontaneous. Right intention insinuates. Right intention gives you a feeling that you're not doing something right and you have to make it right. So if you have right intention, if you have to correct or you have to have right intention, it doesn't come from the spontaneous. It's not spontaneous, therefore it cannot be absolute. If it is absolute, it must be not with intention, it's spontaneous. So therefore, absolute means spontaneous. Spontaneous means no effort, no intention. Everything leads back to the absolute. What is the absolute? You are not operated or caused or diverted or controlled by the law of cause and effect anymore. Okay? Anything that strikes you on me?
Guru devotion is the most important in leading us out.
No, that's too basic in general. That we heard 10, 15 years ago. Come on, out of this you must have grasped more. Come on. You say you want to spread Dharma, you want your family to go on to Dharma, you have to know Dharma. Come on. come on, think, push yourself to think. Think carefully.
The fundamental is holding the vow.
Why?
Because that will lead us to the absolute.
Okay. Why did the vow lead you to the absolute?
Because that will gain
us. Think carefully. It's very logical. Don't be right. Think carefully, because you know what? When you die, you're on your own. Alright, think carefully. This is not about who cares what people think, you're stupid or right. When you die, you're on your own.
By holding vows, we gain a merit to
Okay, number one. Number two, any other things?
Holding vows and guru devotion.
No, holding vows leads to the absolute. Fine. Next, what else leads to the absolute?
Strip off the ego grasping.
No, you don't understand. You're using a lot of big words. You're using a lot of big words, but it doesn't melt together. Doesn't melt. Very difficult to teach that teaching. Very, very difficult. Very difficult. No one has grasped it. No one. Very, very difficult. We haven't done retreats. We haven't practiced the fundamentals. We haven't held our vows. The guru devotion is not strong. Very difficult to teach it. Then you talk and talk and talk. Afterwards, people go, you go, what? I'm not criticizing anyone. This is what I mean. Not ready, our group. Not ready. Far from ready. Anyway, Vajra Shabdha means we planted seeds today. When it ripens, I don't know. In Nyingma and Kaju, you call it Dzogchen, Mahamudra. In Gelugwa, you call it emptiness, Shunyata. Very, very difficult for people who don't hold their vows and who don't do their preliminary practices and don't keep their samaya. You know, it's not a matter of how much you do preliminaries. It's keeping samaya. Very important. Don't Tongpa achieve what I talked about just by serving them, by study, offering Bharatan to the Guru every single night. The cook also achieved it at the same time by serving the Guru. Lama Adisha. By serving Lama Adisha. The cook every single day has to go to the river, walk for miles to get the water. He has to walk for miles to the forest to bring wood. Then he has to cook, because you see, they don't have buildings, but they lived in tents and nomads at that time. And provide fodder, provide food, and provide, and then he has to actually get the food, he has to cook it up, have to walk for miles to go clean it. And every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for Lama Adisha is a very good introduction. But it's not like how you just turn on the oven. And this great cook did it every single day, believing that Lama Adisha is a holy man. And he offered food every day. And great Dzongtongpa, the lay practitioner of Lama Adisha, didn't do any of the physical work, but he really studied, he held his vows, he practiced bodhicitta. And every single night, he would not make any offerings to the Buddha, or any jewels, or any three jewels, no one. Every single night, one butter lamp he would make, and butter was a very big commodity, very expensive in Tibet. Every night he would have one butter lamp, he filled it up, clean it, and when Lama Adisha wants to sleep, he would offer the butter lamp for Lama Adisha, he made three prostrations. When he was asked why, he said, there's no other Buddha than my Buddha. Why make offerings to statues and hankas when the Buddha in front of me giving me teachings every single day? And then one day when Lama Adisha gave teachings on emptiness, the cook and Dzongtongpa achieved realization at that moment together, simultaneously. One by effort and faith and merit, one by study and collection of merit and study. Achieved simultaneously. That is historical, by the way. You can read that in Adisha Dzongtongpa's biography. I was so impressed with that. When I read that, along with a few other things, I decided Guru devotion is the way. But not the kind of type of Guru devotion you Malaysians think about. Just serve and cook and do what he wants. No. The Guru devotion of holding vows. The Guru devotion of being nice to people that live with us. The Guru devotion of doing our practice and keeping commitments. Real Guru devotion is not sitting next to your Guru and massaging him all day. That's wonderful if you can do that. If that's all you can do, that's wonderful. Real Guru devotion is keeping your samaya and vows. Real Guru devotion is being nice to the people who live with you. Nice. Not one day or 2 days, not when you're in a good mood, not when things go right. Every day, when things go wrong. devotion is doing one's practice. Real guru devotion is doing one's retreat. Real guru devotion is anything, any action that takes you away from the self-grasping mind. Any action that takes you away from the self-grasping mind is guru devotion. So if we practice guru devotion correctly, you'll become very attuned. But physical guru devotion leads to the real one. For some people, they can go directly to guru devotion. So it depends. A cave in the snow. I mean, like in Nepal, you guys read. She practiced real guru devotion without even being near her guru. And the guru died. She practiced real guru devotion. She still does. Because he told her to build a nunnery, and she's doing it. Even he's dead. See, some of us, even when the guru is around, tell us what to do, and he's watching and scolding us, we don't do it. People like Denzin Palmo, even when the guru has passed away, she still does it, keeps her promises. Real guru devotion is not hanging around a guru and trying to be a superstar, hanging around a guru trying to be the main attendant. Real guru devotion is holding your vows. Real guru devotion is the 8 verses of the thought transformation. Real guru devotion is being nice to the person right in front of your face every single day. If you want guru devotion, you can't even do that. What advanced teachings are we going to get? Real guru devotion is generosity, letting go of my beliefs. Real guru devotion is keeping our commitments to our tantric lamas. Real guru devotion. That's real. If we do that, the merits will accumulate. It will explode. And you know, we hear a little bit, we understand. People want advanced teachings. They intellectually can grasp it, but it stops there. And for some people who hear advanced teachings, it becomes an object for them to go through the 3-door rounds. Why? They pop up with pride and knowledge. During Drupal Khunle's time, a Tibetan monk teed up, who ran around partying and having sex with everything and shitting and peeing everywhere, but he was monk teed up. Debated with a Geshe. After debating with the Geshe was puffed up with pride and arrogance because he was extremely learned, much more learned than Drupal Khunle. And then the Geshe told him, "You're going to go to hell. You're going to hold your vows. What kind of monk are you?" So Drupal Khunle told him, "I can't go to hell, there's no room for me. It's filled with Geshe's." And he walked away. Around monks who held their vows, he smelled sweet. Around monks who didn't hold their vows, he smelled like poop. And some monks would go, "Oh God, this smelly, take a bath." He goes, "It's not me that's smelly." Some other monks say, "Oh, that Drupal Khunle smells so good." He would manifest things like that. He's very well known. That's that monk. It's like a cyclone in Chinese. Just like a cyclone. He was obnoxious. He would lay on the street with no clothes on, here just clothes, no clothes on, and his thing standing up. And when it's time to subdue people, and they say, "What kind of monk is that?" They say, what kind of Buddhist are you?" He said, "What are you talking about? What you're looking at is not me." They go away. And some people look and say, "Oh, look how scandalous." They say, "I'm not scandalous. It's part of my body. I was born with this. It's a male reaction to find out what to do." But why? You're the one having lust in it, and the women will run because they got caught. Yeah, he would do things like that. Shocking. Shocking Tibetan society. Can you imagine? "Gee, I wish I was reincarnation. That'd be fabulous. I'd like to be that, but not in Malaysia. I don't want to be shocking and put to jail with watching David be famous. Because he's small and I'm not." "I don't want to go to jail. I'll be jealous of David. Everybody will be knocking on his cell, not me. I'd be like, it's not fair. I'm fair and beautiful and fabulous." And they'll be like, "But you're not small." I'll be like, "Oh, break my cup." The advantage is being small, you know. You can be popular in some places. It's like that. I don't understand that. But he has bodhisattva. I understand, but it doesn't affect me and I'm attached to it. And he had that another test for everything, but never mind. Isn't Henry evil? He's laughing at you, Kong. He made you lose face. All the times that you lost face, you shouldn't have any face left. You walk around with just a neck. And Maple looking at teasing. "Oh,
why not? It's been 10 minutes, no signal, I'm happy. Am I losing him?
See, he's like, she gave back no signal, it's Dharma talks. It has its own little, you know, whatever. This is Dharma talk, no signal. This is in about 15 minutes, there's no signal. This is, I still love you, even though there's no signal. And if you keep looking at me like that, I'm going to punish you, no signal for another 15 minutes. They have their own little signal, you know. Isn't that wonderful? And Mabel's just thinking about that ball in his chest. And the signal, get that out. Just the signal she wanted to see. I love it. Alright, so, now, when I say practice guru devotion, listen carefully. When I say practice guru devotion, I'm not saying for you to serve me like a slave. I'm not telling you to, that I am without fault. I am not telling you that you have to do everything I say. That's not what I'm talking about. When I say guru devotion, it is holding your vows, refuge, bodhicitta, tantric, all three or whatever you have. When I say guru devotion, it is doing your sadhana and practice every day with meditation and offerings. When I say guru devotion, it is practicing the 8 verses of thought transformation with the very people that live with you first, not the planet, not all sentient beings, the very people in your house. Every time you break any of those, you're going away from who you are. Absolute enlightenment. So if you're happy suffering, keep doing that. If you want to be devoted to your guru, you do those three. Giving your guru lots of money is wonderful. Giving your massage your guru is wonderful. But that's not guru devotion. Guru devotion is holding your vows, doing your practices and commitments, and 8 verses of thought transformation immediately with the very people that are near you. Every day, all day. And if you fail, don't simply say, I'm sorry, because you're a hypocrite and you're lying, and you'll create obstacles for your Dharma work. That is guru devotion. Real guru devotion. Lami Shakti Shubhina. May the Reverend practice guru devotion by staying in a cave and becoming enlightened. That's what his real guru devotion. Him for 13 years serving Martha, watching his kids, massaging him, being kicked out, building buildings and cleaning and cooking and taking care of all that was not guru devotion. It was preliminary practice to guru devotion. Milarepa. Real guru devotion is when he went to the cave and he applied the teachings for destroying the self-grasping mind. All that was preparation. Do we need to do that? Depends on who we are. Some people need to do physical guru devotion. Some people don't. What's physical guru devotion? What is physical guru devotion? Being aware of the other person's needs. The guru trains you up to be aware. How he wants his house, how he wants his things, how sensitive you are to it is guru devotion. Why? You're creating awareness in your mind. So if you're blur, if you're stupid, if you're sleepy, if you always forget, you don't listen, you always forget, you have to be told again and again, you have no guru devotion. Not because you're making your guru scream, but because you're not creating awareness. That's real guru devotion. Physical guru devotion, massaging, cleaning, putting things away, all that for the house of the guru. Physical guru devotion, whether he lives in a hut in the forest, getting wood for him in a, from far away, cooking, or in a big lagra, in a Potala palace like the Dalai Lama. Physical guru devotion is awareness. Real guru devotion is practices that destroy the self-grasping mind. E.g., example, vows, practices and commitments and samaya kept, and the 8 verses with just the people with you now. Why? Why do I stress that? Why? Because those are the hardest people to practice. Because they're used to us being bitchy. They're used to us being lazy. They're used to us using them. They're used to us like that, and we're used to them being used to it, and we're used to them. And
simple. So if we can't be generous with the people we love, if we can't let go of anger with the people we love and we still hurt them, what kind of practice are we doing? That person can be our mother and father. That person can be our daughter and son. That person can be our husband and wife. That person can be our lover, our friend, our partner, our flatmate, whatever love. The very people we have to, our workmates, that we live with every day or we see every day, is where we start our Dharma practice. And if we keep failing at that, we're not a failure, but hey, you're digging your grave deeper and deeper. Escape, drugs, music, whatever cannot escape from it at all. Ever. Real guru devotion. Level 1, awareness. Level 2, practices that cut self-grasping mind. But then they're related, aren't they? In depth. So let's stick to those subjects for the next few years. Anybody request me for higher teachings? Be ready. Anybody want higher teachings? Be ready. And anybody who wants to just write down the higher teachings, be ready. Because if you don't know what you're writing, you will misinterpret and you will damage. Be ready. Let's stick to the teachings that are very high, but they look simple and basic. Oh, they're not. As I say, His Holiness Kepi Pobongka Dorjechang, Deji Mingbo, was known as the Lamrim Lama. And he was criticized for many years by Sarah Godin and Drekung during his lifetime for not knowing any Dharma. But only knowing Lamrim, no attainments. He doesn't know anything. And so, and then plus in Sarah May Monastery, he didn't reach the highest Geshe, he didn't study much, he was not a very good, you know, in his test, nothing. He kind of flunked. You can read that Geshe Losa Tarshan's book, by the way. What's that book called? What's that book called?
Basic.
What's that book called? Anybody know? Okay, wonderful. I suggest that reading to people. Okay, now. He was known for that. And he had that criticism about him for years, that he was not a scholar. He didn't know much. All he taught was Lamrim. And you know what? People actually complained about his teaching. They didn't want to go. And they requested for higher teachings, initiations, all that stuff. And you know what? When he finally gave it, all the Geshe's, all the masters, everybody but His Holiness came for his teachings. And every single body who was any body became his disciple. The very great imperial tutors themselves, His Holiness Ling Chu Dojichang, His Holiness Chujang Dojichang, both of them are his direct disciples. The knowledge His Holiness has today comes from these two great masters, and this comes from Pobongka, who was known as the nobody, the Lamrim Lama. And they didn't call him Lamrim Lama as the Dhimma means to put him up, put him down. And when he gained Hiduka initiation, Geshe-la told me, in America, Geshe-la told me, people would see a third eye open on him, or people would shake, their bodies would shake. Their bodies would shake from the presence, his presence of the initiation deities. Because why? There's certain rituals where you dissolve the deities into you to plant the seeds. People would shake their bodies, Geshe-la told me. Oh yes. But he didn't manifest that for many years. And what he actually said was, I can't teach you anything higher because you haven't accomplished anything of the basic fundamentals, which is higher in itself. How can I? Very simple explanation. It is told us Pobongka Rinpoche was one day summoned to talk about the southern lineage of Lamrim, summoned by the 13th Dalai Lama. Of course, the 13th Dalai Lama knows he has a lineage. Of course, the Dalai Lama's everything. But there were people in Tibet who was critical of Pobongka Rinpoche, and they wanted to put him down. So the Dalai Lama quelled them, summoned him. And he wasn't prepared with a text. He wasn't prepared with anything. So he was summoned in, the officials came and said, you must come, Pobongka Lama, you must come now, because he lives in Lhasa, the Dalai Lama, origins come. That's in Gyanakya Rinpoche's commentary, by the way, you can read that. And when he went to the 13th Dalai Lama's office, before he went into the inner chambers, he was outside with the ministers, and they said, where's your papers? Where's, you're here to prove the southern lineage, you're here to prove the Lamrim that you've been teaching, that it has a basis in your Lama from Thakpo taught you that. Where is Lama Thakpo Rinpoche? You can't tell us that. So, because you're spreading all over the place, it might be fictitious, it might be made up, it might be your own little, you know, agenda. Because they're very strict in Tibet about teachings being authentic. Especially within the Gelugpa lineage. Very, very, very strict. In the Gelugpas, they don't look down on Termas. But they don't focus on it because they need authenticity that goes back to Buddha. See, Termas are authentic, but only certain people can perceive them. But people who can perceive them, we can't check if they can perceive them or not. We have to just assume. Gelugpas don't go after that. They don't deny because they need things that they... So what happens is, his whole Prabhupada says, I didn't bring anything with me. You know, I didn't have time to get ready. Some is in the hermitage, some is over here, and it's scattered. And he said, nope, you have to have it, because they didn't like it. Well, he says, His Holiness has it in his room. And he said, what? Yeah, how dare you say that? He says, yes, all my sources come from this book, this book, that book, that book, and His Holiness has it all in his room. And then they said, where? Prabhupada was forced to use his clairvoyance for the first time. Forced. You read it in the commentary. He says, on this shelf, in this book, on this chapter, that page. On the Dalai Lama shelf, on this side, on this book, this chapter, this page. And on this shelf, this. He wrote it all down. Prabhupada's Rinpoche's attendant was shaking already. He said, we're going to get it now. He goes, why did the Dalai Lama ban you? They went inside. The minister reported to His Holiness. And he says, how did Prabhupada Lama know I have all these books? And on this shelf? And what page? And where? How? That's the Lama coming. So Pamanka offered his case to His Holiness the 13th Dalai Lama. After they were finished, the 3rd Dalai Lama says, let a teacher's lineage go. After that, in Tibet, the southern lineage of Lamrim, the one we're reading now, the one that, if you don't buy it for me, you buy it. Alright, that's the tagline. Became famous. How kind of His Holiness the Dalai Lama to put Pamanka down. How kind of the Dalai Lama to step on Pamanka. How kind of the Dalai Lama to scare Pabongka. How kind that these high lamas work in such a way it looks like conflict. There is no conflict between the Dalai Lama and Pabongka or any lamas if they're conflict. Absolute. Impossible. His Holiness the Dalai Lama is perfect. His Holiness the Pabongka is perfect. But we who are not perfect, we must manifest. You can read that and get a good piece of commentary and watch it. I have it. Anybody? Oh, you can't read it. Who has Tantra can read it. Who has Tantra can read it. Oh, that part you can read. Anybody can read it. And if you're interested, you let me know. I pass it to our friendly neighborhood secretary here when she's in a good mood and we'll Xerox and you out and get it. Don't you love it? Look at the face. No ego at all. No ego at all. You're fabulous, I tell you. David, like, that's what you think. You want junior secretary for a junior. It's okay. When you retire, you can have lunch with her to show her how much you don't hate her. How's that? And then, when the mirror... Oh, never mind. It's not too bitchy. Now, Guru devotion. Real Guru devotion. Holding the mouse in the absolute is totally connected. Absolute is one. Engines. Shinaka. Dzogchen. Mahamudra. Whatever you want to call it. Actually, there's no name. How can you name something that you can't even perceive and that you don't have the level to perceive? And if you name something that you cannot perceive, something I see in China that doesn't exist here, I come and give a name and I tell you about it. You're not going to, you can't picture it. Even something as fine as that is so common, subtle. Very good. Tenrin Rinpoche will continue teaching the fundamentals, the preliminaries, and basic practices. Why? Because Tenrin Rinpoche himself needs to remind himself. One. Two. Tenrin Rinpoche didn't study at all in the monastery. He didn't debate at all. And that's the truth. He doesn't know anything. But it's okay. Now, we will stick to those. And it will be very powerful for us. Why? If we can achieve the fundamentals, the basics, we can achieve great things. Because if you can't, then there is no higher level monks in Thailand, or Cambodia, or Burma. And there are many high level monks there who go to only sutra, no channel. So if you say, oh, I'm bored with sutra, I'm bored with lama, I'm bored with three minutes of prayer, and I want tantra, you're crazy. Why are you crazy? Then you are saying that everybody in the southern tradition of Buddhism, not the southern tradition of lama, southern tradition, I know what you mean, no. There are many arhats, self-realized beings, once returners, twice returners in those countries, many. Many. If you see a Thai, Burmese, or whatever, southern tradition monk, prostrate, get on your knees and make offerings. You never know who is a arhat. You never know. When I go to Thailand, I prostrate to them. Or I go on my knees when I make offerings. Yeah, I'm a Rinpoche, so what? So what? A Rinpoche is still like Mary. Oh, yes. Let me give you an example. If you're an ordained person, you have your ordination vows, but you have no attainments, but you hold your vows simply and as best as you can, a monk. And you have a fully achieved 10th level bodhisattva who's a lay person. If the bodhisattva prostrates to that monk, he will still gain merits. That's how holy the vows are. That's the end of the denial. So don't doubt the fundamental teaching. Isn't that incredible? His Holiness Lingo Jichang, who's Yamataka. His Holiness Sakya Chinzen, who's Manjushri, attended teachings from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. They had great thrones made for them. Very great thrones. His Holiness Sakya Chinzen was supposed to be the king of Tibet. Before the Dalai Lamas took over, the Sakya patriarchs are all the kings of Tibet. So they have very high status in Tibet, very high. So they actually sit on very high thrones to show respect. And also, Sakya Chinzen himself is Manjushri. So when they, the current one, so when they attended teachings, they had two thrones, the one Dalai Lama facing here, and one here, and one here. Very high. When His Holiness Lingrunji came, Sakya Chinzen came, they had a little argument. Who would sit on the throne closest to the Dalai Lama, the higher rank? His Holiness Lingrunji said, you must sit there because you're Manjushri, and also, you're the king of Tibet. You're the lineage. You're very high. Sakya Chinzen says, no, I'm just a used slave man. You're a monk. Please sit there. And they argue that before. In the end, Lingrunji lost and he has to sit in the front above Sakya Chinzen. This is a very well-known story. Because although Sakya Chinzen is so high in rank and so enlightened, you know, really is the patriarch of Tibet, Lingrunji being a monk still sits above. But Lingrunji, he's not some guy you pick off the streets in Zurich or something. No, he's not. Or Taipei, want to smirk. Oh no. But it shows you their nature. And, can you imagine Sakya Chinzen telling himself to Lingrunji, I'm just a useless layman. I wish I was as useless of a layman as he was. Can you imagine Sakya Chinzen is a useless layman? Here, Chinese, they just look at you wrong. You made me lose face guards. Can you imagine Sakya Chinzen be so high, he tells everybody he's a useless layman? He's not human humble. He's telling you the truth. He feels that. Let me tell you, I met this old Sakya Chinzen. I walked around Gangneung with him. I was looking at his hair, his earrings, and all that stuff. You know, I was thinking, cool earrings. I walked around, and he walked around all Gangneung circumambulating. I followed right behind, because we have to be an entourage, you know. When he comes to Gangneung, the lamas have to come receive him. Yeah. And he himself goes to Trijanarji's house, sits on Trijanarji's throne, and Trijanarji makes offerings to him. Can you imagine that? Sakya Chinzen, that's how high he is. He is so beautiful, he comes to Sarah, Trijanarji, and he gives offerings to all. When he gives initiation, even the oracle of Dorje Shukin, all the high lama, everybody goes to the initiation, Sakya Chinzen. He is Manjushri. I've received his blessing many times. And he definitely has good ones. He has shown it to me directly. I'll tell you that story another time, directly. Because I went to that personal audience with him. The module being you have upstairs that I've offered to the center, but you guys are not ready yet. You know that one I want to auction off to the center? That one's blessed by me.
Really?
Can I have that for the tin? If I get a percentage, yes! Oh, God. But you know what? I'm going to make 10 of those replicas, so pick out the one you think. Well, you know, when you rub each other blood, you rub off blocks. So they all blessed us like the tin, so I can have 10 of them. Isn't that wonderful? It's like a great idea. See, he's like, 10 tin. Let me calculate that. He's writing it all down. Got this thing. He's got a recorder this big, stuck inside of here. As you know, he's from you know where. It's smaller than any of the airport. I got Chad is awake, can you believe that? More frustrations! More! He's done 6,000 already, doing 500 a day, he told me. He said it's getting easier, it's going to go up to 800. That's good. Maybe go up to 1,500. But every 2 weeks, 2 weeks, increase 1,200. 1,200 increase. You don't do it like that. 2 weeks, 100. 2 weeks, 100, till you reach 1,500. And you do that up to about 60,000, 70,000, then you taper off. When you reach about 60,000, then you start doing 700, 700, then you do 600, 600, 1,000, 500, 500, like that, like that, like that. Slowly. Go like that. Understand? Good. 35 confessionals and concentrate and focus. Child doing 500 a day is not one who is going to finish 100,000. Wonderful. Maybe we'll have one mosque to get on here. If you don't hold your vows, if you don't hold your samayas, vows are gateways. You know when you go up to Jensen Highlands, you know they make the road markers on the sky very bright so you don't fall off the hill, drive off the hill, you know those little white things, what's that called? The white lines. They're very bright, isn't it? And you reflect on it, reflect back. So vows are kind of like that you don't go off the hill. You don't dry off. What's that called in Chinese? I don't know, you tell them in Chinese, Ban Guan. Ban Guan? How about Fekwa? No, oh God, you're evil, Tiki. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? They're like that. So, when you hold your commitments, by knowing your vows, projecting yourself to vows, then the Dharma Protector is very easy to act for you. The whole Dharma Protector practice, listen carefully, the whole Dharma Protector practice and how fast and how quick